Now it's time for very serious football talk with the man who met his wife on a blind date, chaperoned by his parents.
They actually came along on the first date with us. That was a...
No!
I rode in the back seat. I was 22.
The man who needs to take a minute to remember the names of all of his children.
Do all of your kids have the same first letter?
No, actually. Let me think. Do any of them? Tucker, Mason, Cole, Isabel, and Lucas.
The man who can defend you in court, but will probably choose not to.
I'll cop to this on a public setting right now. I am an aggressive cuddler in a consensual sense.
Comma, officer.
Good grief, he's a pastor too? When does this guy sleep?
You will find Seth Kaiser everywhere except for in his or your bed, because not only does he not sleep, he's also a faithful husband. So that's important.
It's Seth Kaiser of The Athletic on Almost Entirely Sports.
We've talked to Seth Kaiser often enough and consistently enough on Tuesdays on this show that I've genuinely run out of ways to say, hey, it's Seth, and it's Tuesday. What fun it is to ride down the One Horse Open show. I don't know. It's Christmas, Seth. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Josh. I didn't expect such a festive beginning.
Me neither.
We're doing Christmas stuff on the 3rd, huh?
Yeah, I didn't expect it either. I just hopped on the sleigh with One Horse and let it take me where it wanted to go.
Nice. That's what they do. Horses are huge. They can take you wherever they want.
Are you a big Christmas music guy, or like, do you have a cutoff time in mind when you're like, all right, before this is literally a sin, and you can say that because you have that authority? Do you have a hot Christmas music take?
My Christmas music take is I'm generally not a big fan of it.
Yeah.
Being who I am and believing what I do, I find most Christmas music to be kind of hoity-toity, honestly. I'm like, Mr. Like, you know, the only good Christmas song is Oh Holy Night, you know? And so no one needs my take, so it's the only song holy enough. And so I'm just not a big Christmas fan. Although, did you see Antonio Brown's take on Christmas music?
No.
Oh, my goodness. I can't believe I get to fill you in on something.
I'm so
excited.
Antonio
Brown posted on Twitter a video clip of Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You with a bunch of Patriots highlights. I'm dead serious. I can't believe you didn't know that happened.
No, I didn't. I'm now Googling it to see for myself, then also Googling to see if I can get a video tattooed on my body, because that sounds incredible.
It's just so please, baby, please, that I just, oh, man, it's sad. It's very sad.
That's incredible. I look forward to seeing this very much. You said a second ago, you said you're not a big Christmas music fan, but then you said you're not a big Christmas fan. Is that true, or did you misspeak? Because I want to dig in on that.
I didn't mean to misspeak. I like Christmas a lot. I love my family. I love getting together with everyone. I obviously love the Christmas message. I love almost everything there is to love about Christmas.
Except for the music, which, by the way, I'm not here to fight you on. I think that's totally reasonable. I
figured that most Christmas music wasn't holy enough for you. I kind of pegged you as a guy who felt the same way as me on that.
Well, so, and what, you know, whenever you said being who you are, I thought you were saying that, like, litigiously, like, there's no way that Santa should have all the authority to check every list and also the ability to check it twice. Also, there have to be some labor laws you can get in on with how the elves are overworked. I thought you were just looking at it from a more lawyerly perspective, saying, like, oh, this is messed up.
Right. You know, someone really should look into those things.
They really should. You should dig into that. You don't have enough going on, right? You want to add some more lawyer work to your... Is that under your purview? Do you need to go to a different type of school for elf law?
I would think so. I don't think you get a lot of... Although, you know, if you're going to get educated on elf law, Minnesota seems like a relatively decent place. I mean...
It's a great point.
You know, unless I'm going to go to Alaska or something.
That's a great point. And obviously they don't have lawyers in Canada, so you have to go all the way to Alaska. There's no north above that. Is law different in Canada?
Right.
I mean, it has to be, right? Like, that has to change a lot by
yes, they have a different constitution, Josh.
Yeah. I mean,
so,
I know, but like I'm trying to figure out why you said, like, is it just because you would have to start over from ground zero again in Canada? Like, that makes sense, I guess.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. The Canada, it would be a whole different ball of wax.
But also, Canada might be the place you need to go to really be able to you know, help out, to help elves unionize. I don't know if you can do that in America.
I'll give that the consideration it deserves.
Well, that is so dismissive because I know how much it deserves. That's a good line. I'm a little.
That's one of my favorites. That's one of my favorites. I give you permission to use it.
Yeah, I will. I will use it judiciously, or at least I'll consider using it. I'll give it as much consideration as it deserves. Let's talk about running back, Seth. It's been a while since we've had an excuse to do all of this. And by the way, you can read all of Seth's work, as always, on theathletic.com. And you can also listen to the Times Ours podcast with Seth and Nate Taylor and some other very handsome host that goes up every Monday and Friday. Feel free to workshop a joke while I said it. It sounded like you were ready. Go ahead.
No, I was just thinking as you talked, I thought this last episode, Mondays, which is available for anyone, I thought it was one of our best episodes yet in terms of combining fun and information.
Yes, that's true. It was very, very good. And I'm glad you mentioned Monday episodes are free wherever you get your podcasts. Fridays are just for subscribers to The Athletic, which you should be doing by now anyway, because that's where all the writing is also. But we talked a little bit there, and now you've written a film review on Darwin Thompson. It was it was a very late development in the Chiefs Raiders game, but you took a look at Thompson. There's all the injuries. They signed Spencer Ware today. We had kicked around maybe bringing back Marcus Marshall. We had kicked around maybe trying Trekendrick West again. He retires. He announces that on Twitter today. So there's all of that movement there. And I want to just sort of follow the news. Whenever you look at Spencer Ware returning after the stretch he had with the Chiefs over the last few years, you think what?
I like it. The one thing is that something that's been a problem this year is Damian Williams keeps getting nicked up. Mm-hmm. And LeSean McCoy, I can't really figure out what they're doing with McCoy. He looks fine when he's out there. I think he's played pretty well outside of the fumbling issue, which has cropped up for the first time in his career. But he's generally looked quick. He's looked like he's had a decent amount of burst. Although we should return to the burst conversation when we start talking about Thompson.
Yes.
Because there's a difference there. He's generally been fine, but they're using him, I guess, maybe judiciously would be the great word. I mean, they are not giving him a lot of touches.
Mm-hmm.
Darrell Williams, I like just fine. He's okay. I think a healthy Spencer Ware is a better player than Darrell Williams. It's just Ware, much like how Damian Williams has been. Man, there's so many Williams. Much like how Damian Williams has been this year, Ware spent the last couple years with the Chiefs kind of just getting nicked up repeatedly.
Yeah.
And when he wasn't nicked up, he generally played very well. He runs with good power. He's got some quickness to him, a solid receiver. He's a decent running back. Just he kept being good as well. He didn't look quite as explosive or quite as powerful. So that's the one thing with it. But, I mean, I assume if they're signing him, they ran him through a physical, and he's hopefully good to go. And I think that'll be great. He'll have fresh legs. And I like Ware a lot as a player, at least how he's been in the past in Kansas City. So hopefully he's got a little bit of something left in the tank.
And then so for Darwin Thompson, I mean, obviously, we'll talk about the other stuff from Chiefs Raiders, but this was where you went first. And I want to know what you ended up finding when you looked at Darwin Thompson more closely, but I want to know why you decided to start with Darwin Thompson out of that game.
Well, it was such a weird game, and some of the things that I really wanted to examine required all 22. Why did Derek Carr never have anyone to throw to? And that's one thing I'm examining in the weekly film review that'll be dropping tomorrow. Looking at what the secondary did. I wanted to look at kind of what the other receivers are doing besides Hill and Kelsey, because Mahomes sure doesn't seem to trust a lot of other receivers right now.
Yep.
Or at least he's not throwing to them that much. So maybe it's not an issue of trust. Maybe they're just not open.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to look into that, and I wanted to look at Mahomes himself, obviously, like I do every week. Good quarterback analysis requires that you see the whole field, whereas Thompson is a guy I've been really intrigued by. I've kind of felt that he should be getting on the field a little bit more as the season has developed. I really like what he did in preseason, and I think he's got a skill set that fits perfectly into the offense and could really help, and you can review him without seeing the whole field, because you just need to see the offensive line and the linebackers and the defensive line, and you can see all that with the regular broadcast view. So that all kind of came together, and it had a really big response. A ton of people seem to enjoy it. I think he's a popular player right now. The unknown is always a very popular player.
Yes.
The unknown with potential. And that's what he really flashed. And so what I set out to look at was, you know, it was obviously kind of, you could consider it garbage time, mm-hmm. if not at the beginning of the drive in the fourth quarter, which it's worth noting. They took up like almost 10 minutes on this fourth quarter drive, where Thompson had 11 carries for 44 yards, which is as many as the other running backs got combined throughout the game. It was kind of a garbage time thing, so I wanted to see, you know, was he making this stuff happen? Were the Raiders kind of giving up? What was he doing that allowed him to have success? And that's what I really wanted to dive into.
And on the mass of carries he got at the end, he talked about it after the game, some that he was tired. And then Andy Reid yesterday out at the media availability, he was asked if it was like a load management thing, you know, for LeSean McCoy. And Andy Reid said to a chorus of chuckles in the media room that it was more about a load management for Darwin Thompson. And it was that he was going to give him the ball until he couldn't give him the ball anymore, which obviously I think... I think that shows they're trying to see something from Darwin Thompson, and they're trying to see what he can show. Garbage time, sure, this is better than preseason. These are still actual football players that are going to be on the roster again next week, and it's the actual Chiefs offensive line. One other thing, and then I'll let you talk again. But I was doing the pregame show on 810 on Sunday with Tim Grunhard, and he brought up, and he mentioned earlier last week too on 810, but he brought up the relationship between a running back and his offensive line. I had asked Austin Ryder about that a couple of weeks ago. He downplayed it, but Grunny said that really is a legitimate factor in, you know, building that chemistry. And those are 11 carries behind the starting offensive line that Thompson got there. So that all makes sense to me. But I'll ask you, I guess, is what did you actually see as we've justified that these carries do matter?
Right, and it's, here's something to really kind of lay out the fact that they matter even more. This is an Oakland team, and their starters were still all out there. Most importantly, Jonathan Hankins, who, man, I wish the Chiefs would have found a way to pick him up because he is a problem in the middle.
Yeah.
He is an excellent, excellent run defender, and the Chiefs' interior couldn't handle him when they played back in week two.
Yes, sorry, I lost
time for a minute there.
I understand. That
in week two, and they couldn't handle him then, because if you remember, when they played Oakland in week two, they Shady averaged like 1 yard a carry or something like that.
Yeah.
And then same thing this week, the Chiefs could not run the ball at all. Darrell Williams had one 15-yard run, and I think he had like 13 for the game. And on like another four or five carries, he got stuffed every other carry. McCoy didn't have any real success running the ball either. Between the two of them, I think they averaged like 2 yards a carry or something like that. And so there's value in that, because what you have is a defense that's been solid, solid against the Chiefs offensive line. And part of that, I think, they're just more physical. They're bigger, they're stronger, and they do a good job penetrating and kind of wrecking some of that zone blocking scheme that you see in Kansas City. And so it's valuable to say, okay, no one else on the Chiefs roster has been able to run on these guys all year. And then he takes over in this final drive. And if you watch the film, they were still trying. This wasn't like Oakland was like, oh, screw this, this is ridiculous. They were still whipping the Chiefs' interior line pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
They were still getting penetration. They were still preventing lanes from being opened up. It was really a lot of what Darwin Thompson was doing differently. So there's value in seeing that, because the difference in running backs is usually in subtle things that are tough to see, unless, you know, you got some obvious guy that's like got incredible, you know, power, incredible speed. But the difference between a run being a success and a failure is often a half second in how long it takes a runner to see an open lane, and a half second in how quickly he can burst through it. And that's what Thompson showed multiple times. He identified cutback lanes and exploited them the way that I think he ought to. He ran with more power than you'd think, considering he's kind of a smaller guy. He at least he keeps his legs churning. If he gets hit from the side or has guys trying to drag him down, he generally does a pretty good job falling forward. He made a few guys miss. He got to the edge. He generally did everything right. He hit the holes other running backs just weren't hitting, at least not as quickly. And that was a big part of why he had success. It was often him making something when there wasn't a ton there to be had. And so that's impressive to me. And I think, like Reed alluded to, when you give a back 11 carries on one drive, you're looking for something.
Yeah.
How's he doing at the end of the drive? Is he holding up? And the end of the drive, he had that touchdown run where he kept his legs churning and powered through with an assist from Andrew Wiley.
Mm-hmm.
And that's impressive that he finished strong. So I personally saw a lot of things that made me say, huh, this guy should be getting the ball more. Do I know whether he's a full-time guy? No, I don't. But I do know he looks, and to go back to the explosion issue with LeSean McCoy, McCoy still looks somewhat explosive this year, though he's not what he was at his peak. But when you see Thompson accelerate, you can see a visible difference there, mm-hmm. and that's important.
What do you see being the right role for him going forward? Because I've seen what I'm going to show my hand a little bit, I guess, but I've seen what I would call overreactions, not from anything you just said, but from, you know, Twitter, the hive mind, about what he can be in terms mm-hmm. of, you know, role and player comparisons and all of that. But whenever you see all of those traits that the Chiefs absolutely could use for all the times that you and I have talked about the air read offense, I would love for 3rd-and-2 to not be a nightmare.
Right.
Whenever you look at what his role could be, what do you hope for?
I mean, if I were going to go for what I hope for, I'd love for him to be a guy that can take 60-70% of the snaps and be kind of the primary guy. By primary with an asterisk, not primary the way Kareem Hunt was,
right?
But a guy who takes the majority of the snaps, he did take. It's worth noting, he had 34 snaps against mm-hmm. the Raiders, so it's not like he only played at the end of the game.
Absolutely,
they just didn't really get him the ball much.
Yeah,
and so they were obviously testing him out in other situations as well, whether it's pass protection, mm-hmm. play action, running routes, that kind of stuff. I would love to see him, for one, get the ball in space.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of quickness, a lot of speed, runs very well. I think he's a guy who could make some explosive plays in space, especially against linebackers. He wasn't asked to run a really detailed route tree in college, so I don't know if he can do some of the same things that, like, Damian Williams can do in terms of route running, but he's got great quickness and great speed, so I think that'll kind of, if you're matched up with a linebacker and you've got his athleticism, you don't necessarily need to be a great route runner.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'd like to see would be at least him getting more shots here over the next few weeks, just to see how he does hold up with increased volume. Because what they're doing right now in the run game, and you and I have talked a ton about the run game isn't that important, and it's not, but it's always better to be good at something
right.
than not be good at something.
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
Even if it's something that doesn't move the needle that much, it still matters mm-hmm. to an extent. You know, and so we always, you know, using hyperbole, all the run offense, run defense don't matter. They matter a little, just not as much as the pass offense and defense. And I think we've seen that with the Chiefs taking a huge down backslide in their run game this year. That does affect the offense. And I would love to see him get an opportunity to see if it is just the offensive line who get a lot of the blame from what I've seen, you know, out in those Twitter streets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are really down on the offensive line. Or maybe with Thompson out there, it would look more like what it looked to close out the game in the fourth quarter against the Raiders. Not overpowering, but certainly competent. And that would be a step up over what the run game has been most of the season.
You put out a GIF, which the video clip is also in the article, showing him in pass blocking the play he got called for the hold on, which was, you know, which was really frustrating. I don't think I could have thrown the flag on it, but you know, I understand that that's part of the concern. But then he learned from that mistake on the next play that looked a lot like that. If people want to check out that video, you can see it at Seth's Twitter timeline at RealMNChiefsFan or in the article and the film review up on The Athletic right now. You mentioned sort of the negativity about the offensive line. I don't know if I'm out here boiling scalding hot takes about negativity, but I definitely been keeping an eye on it, and it's something that you touched on a little bit in a clip from earlier today, and I know you're keeping an eye on it as you are reviewing Patrick Mahomes and everything.
Right.
There were a lot of times in this game, and we've seen it a few times this year, but it I don't know if I just finally had seen it enough to know that I was seeing it again or what, but there were so many of those snaps where Mahomes takes the snap, drops back, and then just keeps dropping back. Like, he's just keeping that same pace as if he was going to take a 50-step drop, and then he basically throws it like a fadeaway jumper. And because he's Patrick Mahomes, a lot of those end up being decent throws, even with, you know, footwork that you would not want in that spot, ideally. It seems like he doesn't. It seems like he doesn't trust the interior of the offensive line. I'm not sure if he trusts anyone across the offensive line right now. How real do you think that is? How if that is what's happening, how fair do you think that is from Mahomes? And then what do they do about it if you agree with points one and two?
Sure. What I'm seeing is there are snaps where Mahomes is running from ghosts at this point.
Yeah.
It's not as often. As in the obvious comparison, even though it doesn't feel fair because it feels like I'm always dogging the guy, but the obvious comparison would be to Alex Smith, and it's not as bad as Alex was. Alex tended to bail very quickly, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But Mahomes, that what you're talking about, you know, backing up that extra, you know, three or four steps, that changes a lot of things. It changes throwing lanes. It changes where he's at, so it changes where Schwartz and Fisher are trying to block.
Yeah.
I mean, that's tough on tackles when you do that. And it also, it makes every throw a little bit harder. You know, it might not seem like a lot to some, oh, well, it's only an extra 3 yards. I got to tell you, 3 yards isn't nothing.
Yeah.
Especially when you're talking about making throws across the field. And so what I do see him backing up more, and I see him big pockets more. Actually, this is going to go into the review tomorrow. I'm not going to say Mahomes played poorly because I don't think he did. I do think, he, much like with the Chargers game, he did not play as well as what we've seen from him, but he still played in a way, in my opinion, that well over half the NFL would take on any Sunday. I do think the scale is different for him, though, obviously.
Yeah.
But on the first drive of the game, he had a clean pocket that he bailed out from the moment he saw the Raiders were executing a stunt against LDT and Schwartz.
Mm-hmm.
And it did, you know, he looked at the defender who was stunting inside and took off. He didn't even wait to see if LDT picked up the block effectively, which he did. And so he ended up bailing out to the right side. It was a ball that got thrown away. And because he bailed out, he didn't see that DeMarcus Robinson came open for what could have been a touchdown.
Mm.
And that's not good. Those are the, you know, those missed shots, right, and happy feet snaps that Alex Smith used to really struggle with 4, 5, 6 times a game that don't show up in the box sheet, really. You know, it's not an anything. It's one incomplete pass, maybe, or maybe a fumble for a couple yards.
Sure.
So it doesn't show up as like a pick or a sack, but it can really hurt your team in opportunity cost.
Yeah.
Well, I saw that a few more times against the Raiders and the Chargers than I'm used to seeing, which is interesting because against Tennessee, he was absolutely face-meltingly brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a concern. And I noticed a couple snaps later on great throw that he had to make to Travis Kelce. It was a similar stunt that was executed, and LDT just completely missed it.
Mm-hmm.
And there was immediate pressure. And that was one of those moments where you go, oh.
Yeah.
So that's why I think Mahomes is having an issue there, is he doesn't know what he's going to get from one snap to a next.
Yeah.
And that's problematic, especially when you've got a guy like LDT who has a pretty big contract.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I think some of the problems are stemming from. He's not sure how the offensive line is going to handle movement up front, which is a big deal with the Patriots coming up next, because that's what they did to just wreck the offensive line both times they played last year.
Yeah, and so I do want to like peek ahead in that regard because, I mean, that feels like maybe the most exploitable matchup at this point. I mean, we've seen the Patriots. We saw them on Sunday night. That defense looked good, I guess, against the Texans. But that's the first time that we've seen them look merely good since they lost to the Ravens. And then that was the only other time. Like, oh, man, this defense, you know, whenever good teams play them, it can wobble a little bit. But specifically, the matchup in the trenches there, like for the problems the Chiefs have had running the ball, that's largely by design, I think. You talk about just the guys they've given the money to across the offensive line. It's not a bunch of maulers. Like they're not Vikings. Like not the Minnesota ones. I'm thinking like literal Vikings. They've paid guys to pass block. But whenever that's a struggle in the pass blocking, I get exceedingly nervous. I don't know if, you know, how much of it needs to go to Mahomes maybe developing some bad habits and how nervous that makes me, which it makes me really nervous because I don't want to see this guy developing bad habits like that, obviously. But even throughout the larger picture of the line and Mahomes and that relationship, what would you have them do differently? And if there's not a good answer to that, how concerning is it?
I think with the line, some of the problems they're having is, in addition to the stunts and twists and that kind of stuff, which that's just a communication issue. Mm-hmm. Andy Heck's a good offensive line coach. Mm-hmm. I trust them to work through that. They struggled with it a bit more last year than I would have liked, and it was consistent. But all you can do is work on your communication. Mm. You've got to understand and identify when those things are coming. Here's my slight, my more overarching concern that I'm not sure is going to go away. The Chiefs have a bunch of guys in the line besides Mitch Schwartz that don't deal well with power rushers. Mm. And that's across the board.
Yeah.
You know, Austin Ryder doesn't deal particularly well with them. I think he's a stronger player than Mitch Morse overall, but his technique isn't nearly as good. And so that makes it tough. Wiley struggles with power rushers. LDT has struggled with power rushers. And Fisher, that's kind of his weakness along the edge. And the problem when you've got guys who struggle with power rushers, I can't help but wonder how that affects their ability to handle stunts and twists. Because if you're bracing yourself, if you're so, okay, I know I need to overcompensate because I'm not quite as strong as this guy and all that stuff, does that make you a split second slower in reacting to stunts and twists? Whereas if you know you can handle a guy straight up, you can kind of lay back for a minute and see what he's going to do. Now, this is not, look, I'm not an O-line coach. And so if there's an O-line coach listening who's just groaning, well, I apologize. But that's something that I see is they appear to be really ready to take aggressive sets and trying to take on their defenders quickly in the pass protection sets that they take. Other than, again, Schwartz is the exception to all of this. He's just awesome, okay?
Yeah.
But when you have some of those issues, it just seems like they're trying to maybe compensate at times with aggressive sets, trying to be the aggressor and the initiator of contact, and they're setting up, preparing for power rushes, because if they don't, the entire pocket collapses on Mahomes way faster than I'm comfortable with. If you look at certain plays, like that awesome 30-plus yard throw, like 40-yard throw to Travis Kelce on the left side of the field, he was getting some pressure there. There was another throw to the left side to Kelce where the entire pocket kind of collapsed around him. So I think that's a problem. And some part of me does wonder, again, if this is a line, like you said, that's designed specifically to be pass protection, they really need to be better at it.
Yeah.
Because some of the line seems like it was assembled more so to be good at executing a zone blocking system to be able to get out into space and do all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, one thing you sacrifice if you want more athletic guys, unless it's like Rodney Hudson, who's just a freak, you generally sacrifice power. And I think that's something the Chiefs have sacrificed up the middle. And you hear that talked about in terms of the run game quite a bit. But I do think that matters in the passing game, too. So that was a long road to a short thought that I do think some of those trust issues are earned. Some of them can definitely be worked on because this offensive line has been solid in pass protection in the past. So I think there will be some trial by error things now that guys are all healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But some of it might be systemic.
This season for me, and to that whole point, a long answer, but a good one, even though, again, offensive line coaches, you can tweet Seth at @RealMNChiefsFan.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You sounded so defeated.
I like learning. I would love to hear where I'm wrong. I have several offensive line coaches that coach at various levels that I run stuff by because it's important.
Yeah.
Ask people who know.
Yes. But if you're not an offensive line coach, stay the heck out of his mentions. Stay the Andy heck out of his mentions. So this season has, I think, fundamentally shifted a little bit how I would feel about, like, the Chiefs drafting an interior offensive lineman in the first round of the draft this year. Like, I have for a long time kind of poo-pooed that. But now I would rather them draft a center at, let's just say, 32 over, say, a running back. Like, I actually wouldn't mind that. And that's a weird place for me to end up.
You know, depending on where they draft, I mean, you make a good point that, you know, they're drafting late.
Yeah.
And in all likelihood, that might be really late. We'll see. And I don't really have a problem. The problem is in the NFL, especially now that people have seen the success that, say, you know, the Colts have had with Quentin Nelson.
Right.
And the problem is not there's very few Quentin Nelsons out
Correct.
Right?
For
you know, these absolute dominating guys who can really alter the makeup of your entire line. And they've got a good line overall. It's not just him.
Right.
I wouldn't hate it because I do think it matters. Your pass protection matters mm-hmm. when you're so reliant on your passing game. And if you just look at some other teams, like go watch a Bills game. Right now, which I use that because that's where Morse went, so I've watched them a little more. But watch the number of snaps, and it's not they're not the best offensive line in football, but you can see snaps where Josh Allen's able to just sit there and just kind of chill.
Yeah.
And just really read the field. And then think about how often you see that with Mahomes. Mm-hmm. You see Mahomes take, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7-step drop and then sit and survey the field.
Yeah.
Or a 5-step drop because they're usually in a shotgun. And just sits and surveys the field for multiple seconds before throwing. It doesn't feel like it's that often anymore.
No, you're right.
It feels like the throws are rushed. It feels like he's got to hurry it up. And so I don't mind at all investing. I personally think, and I would have to ask, you know, analytics guys, I think analytics backs up the idea of investing, if you've got a quarterback, of investing in your offensive line and your wide receivers. I think the analytics backs that up. It's a very important facet. You want to put your franchise quarterback in a position to succeed. And maybe they do need to look at that direction. I think a lot of people are going to want to see it go to the defense, but let's face it, the defense has been great lately. So
yes.
Why would we do that?
Yes. Seriously, if you told me this offseason, listen, I would still love for them to add another corner. Like, I mean, I am going, and I'm going to be banging that drum. If they could have Jalen Ramsey, Patrick Peterson, and third best corner in the world, Tre'Varius Ward, on the roster, and I would still be like, well, they should really draft another one because you never know how much longer Patrick Peterson is going to hang on. Like, I'm in that mindset for the most part.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, the safeties that they brought in this offseason. The difference between running out Jordan Lucas and I don't, you know what? I'm not even sure I know who the top two snap getters were at safety last year because there was so much of like, well, maybe it'll be this guy. But the difference in the safety spot from last year to this year is so overwhelming. And we saw that just as clearly as clear as day against the Raiders.
Absolutely. I mean, and both Matthew and Thornhill made exceptional plays that stand out because, you know, they both had picks in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Thornhill returned his for 6. What's worth noting, you know, Tony Romo did a great job breaking down Tyrann Mathieu's pick.
Yes.
And I thought it was really nice because otherwise, you know, it with almost any other commentator, fans would have been like, oh, wow, well, LOL, Carr just threw it right to Mathieu.
Right.
But that's not what happened.
Right.
What happened was it was a really well-disguised coverage that he thought Mahomes makes that throw all the time. Now, again, not to the defender, but thinking that based on the coverage that they show there, thinking that he's going to have some open field in the intermediate left side of the field. He makes that throw to Kelce all the time. Same with Hill. And so he did a great job breaking down what they did to disguise that coverage. Here's the thing. You can't call that without a safety you trust to have great feet
mm-hmm.
and exceptional closing speed, good hands, and the ability, the savvy to execute it correctly, to disguise it and still and break it off, recognize the throw, know when to move. You have to trust your safety. And I don't think any of the safeties on the roster last year, besides Eric Berry when he's actually healthy, can execute that.
Yeah.
And so it's not just about the fact that he got the pick. It's about how he got the pick because his presence, Tyrann Mathieu's presence, and Juan Thornhill's presence allows Steve Spagnuolo to do things that they just couldn't do last year with safeties that were below average at best. And so they've made a huge impact, not just in the plays they make, you know, chasing down players and all that kind of stuff, but they make the play, they make the defense better even in ways that you don't necessarily see in the coverages it allows them to play. And I mean, Mathieu has been a great example of that. Another example would be Thornhill's stuff on 4th and 1 on that sweep to the outside. You know, Romo talked about that too, where Mathieu made sure he communicated,
yes,
that, hey, you know, rookie, you got to get outside here.
Yes. I'm glad you mentioned the communication, because I was just waiting to say they like run this again. Romo was like, and multiple and on Thornhill's pick as well. I think he might have been with Bashaud Breeland. They're communicating before the play, and then it works. It's so exciting. This is a competent defense.
Exactly. It is a very competent defense. It's a very good pass defense.
Yeah.
And I people still don't want to accept that for one reason or another, probably because the cornerbacks, I mean, they're not a lot of name guys. I've only looked at a few snaps, but Kendall Fuller looks like he was playing like himself.
He also wasn't out there that much, which was also kind of odd. Like, he looked pretty good, yes, but was very limited. Maybe that's an injury thing. I don't know.
Right, right. And one, I think Rashad Fenton has played better than anyone expected him to.
Yeah.
You know, Spagnuolo likes to run some zone looks. Charvarius Ward is excellent in man looks. He's not having those same blown coverages. What we're seeing is a defense that communicates well on the back end. And if you want to complete passes against them, especially passes down the field, you've got to make good throws and good catches. Yeah. The only exception is occasionally like on these rollouts that somehow still fool them every time, and you end up with like a wide open fullback or tight end at the flat. That's making me crazy.
Yeah.
But I assume they'll figure that out. It's an entirely different thing, and I think the safeties are a huge part of it. But I'm reviewing the snaps now, like I said, and this is one of the things I'm going to talk about. I'm going to talk about the safeties' impact, which will be part of what you and I just talked about. But I also want to talk about the corners, because the snaps I'm watching, no one's open.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't like the pass rush like last year, where either the pass rush got home or it was going to be open.
Yeah.
That was consistently the problem. Whereas this year, the coverage is helping the pass rush. Mm-hmm. I've got one video clip where, you know, Carr looked, scanned the field, scrambled around for another like 5-6 seconds, rolled to the left, and just no one was open the whole play. And I just think you're seeing Spagnuolo put these guys they do have some skills. Ward is a good athlete. He's got good length. He's got the ability to turn and run with guys. Fenton is very zone savvy. He understands where he's supposed to be. Bashaud Breeland's physical. He's also very zone savvy. He knows where he's supposed to be. Kendall Fuller's got great feet. These guys do have the ability to execute certain roles, and he's not just asking them to do things that they can't do based on what I'm seeing.
Seth, we're out of time. I have a question about Mecole Hardman that I want to ask you, but you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to ask you about it on Friday's episode of Time's Ours, exclusive to subscribers of The Athletic. As soon as I hang up on you right here, I'm going to go in, I'm going to add it to the Google Doc, and we're going to talk about Mecole Hardman and what he can do against the Patriots on Sunday. That is a cross-show tease to support everything that's going on at The Athletic. You can read Seth's film review that'll pop up tomorrow with all sorts. If you haven't been subscribed, you haven't been reading these, it will make you genuinely smarter without all that much work. Do you know how hard it is to do that in the world, to get significantly smarter while doing very little work? That's Seth's whole job right now. He's offering it to you. All you have to do is go to The Athletic, subscribe there, and you can read all of his genius work. I think that should be your new Twitter bio, Seth. It should be like, you know, all of the things that you currently do, and I make you smarter for very little effort.
I will try to work on a way of saying that sounds appropriate.
That's good. And also, I don't want to make it sound like you're not working hard at it. You do the work so they don't have to. There's something there.
Yes.
There's something there.
I like that one. I do the work so you don't have to. I like that.
There we go. Wait, listen, Blonde Squirrel found the nut here at the end of the segment, and I'll take it. Now I'm afraid to make a joke about squirrels and nut. I don't know. Now I'm nervous. This segment should have ended 2 minutes ago.
It all fell apart at the end, but that's okay. We had a really strong middle.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe that's the segment. Maybe that's just us. Maybe you and I, maybe people would say you and I have very strong middles. I'd argue that. I'd argue that that's true. Thank you, Seth. I'm sorry that the end of this segment was so bad.
Thanks for having me.
Seth Kaiser of The Athletic. You follow him on Twitter at RealMNChiefsFan. Read all the work at The Athletic. Listen to Times Ours Mondays and Fridays, all on The Athletic.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
I'll stand by that. Planet is flat.
If it's not flat, why are we falling off?
It's flat in a circular motion.
What?
That makes no sense. Yeah.
What does that mean? Are we on a record player right now? Can we stop it?
That's what the Earth is. It's a record player.
What's the record? But the record's on a player in that instance, though. What's the record player? If the world's
the record,
a record
player is the universe. And we're just on, the universe is our record player.
That's either the most beautiful or the stupidest piece of bleep I've literally ever heard.
I think it's a little bit of both, and that's what makes it glorious.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Rudy was back on his ridiculous bleep again during this last segment. He's just mumbling about the Nuggets during commercial breaks. It's honestly, like, it's disorienting. Thanks again, Seth Kaiser, for joining us. It says every Tuesday. Go read all of his work on The Athletic. I told you like an hour ago I wanted to give you like my two cents on Darwin Thompson. You got to hear Seth give his, so maybe we're better off with that. But whenever, like, I do think in that thing I mentioned that Andy Reid said on Monday, saying like, oh, you know, it wasn't load management for McCoy, it was load management for Darwin Thompson, and we were going to give him as much as we possibly could. Like, I do think there's something there to, like, you're in one of those rare instances with this team where you're up by a billion late in a game. You can run it, and if you don't get it, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
And you get to try to test out what this guy can bring, which whenever you're a team that's had trouble all year running the ball, I'm good with that. In this specific instance, even as someone who will generally remind you that running the ball isn't as important as lots of people argue it is.
In that moment, though, and that's what you're talking about, like, The game is over. You're just running out clock, and this is a great time to just to see what you have in Darwin Thompson. Figure out, like, you see him in practice. You have an idea of a coaching staff. Like,
he doesn't
what
get
is
a ton of practice, though.
Yeah,
for
like,
sure.
Like, I mean, you have an idea of what he can do, but now you actually get to see in a game and have an idea. Okay, maybe this is how he can actually help the team out in a real, like, in an important game, in a real moment. Like, it's just like that's like it was the perfect time to just be like, hey, we're just going to give this guy as many carries as we can right now, or at least as many touches as we can, you know?
Yeah, and he was involved earlier than that as well. Like, they're clearly trying to see if there's something there as they have all these other injuries. The one thing that we mentioned a little bit earlier, and then again, we just ran out of time in the first hour, and so we went way long with Seth. So I haven't gotten to talk about it yet outside of leading Seth to the topic. But with the offensive line, The running game issues are one thing, because again, that's not the thing that you're most concerned with trying to do with this offense. But the fact that they were built to hold a pocket for Patrick Mahomes, and that they have been not terribly proficient at that, paired with the fact that now it seems like, as Seth said, it seems like Mahomes is seeing ghosts a little bit here and there. That's a bad recipe. And listen, I don't think it's worth our time to say, like, oh, you know, maybe Mahomes really is having some issues here. I think that you can examine the worst part of his game right now without exaggerating it into some, like, large issue that's going to show how he's going to fall to mediocrity. Because I don't think that's worth your time. But I do look with great concern at the ghost seeing behind an offensive line that has lost his trust, honestly, as a passer. That is one of those things that can become, not doomed to become, but over a period of time, can become a bad habit that you then have to work out of. And again, if it does become a bad habit, I would expect Patrick Mahomes, with Andy Reid's help, to work out of it over time. But I would much rather him just avoid that. And if that does show up in big moments, Mahomes can't really be... nothing can ever really be his fault. If Mahomes is ever less than what we saw last year, you've seen this year in a couple of spots, you see the consequences from it. He doesn't have an offense that's built to carry him at any given point. And so a couple of bad plays in a row, a couple of clean pockets that he bails out of in a row, or a couple of those exaggerated dropbacks that ends up leading him into a pass rusher, if that is your second and 10 play after an incompletion, now it's third and 17. Like, or even it's just you're throwing off your back foot, doing a little fadeaway jumper pass because your momentum is going backwards. That is a legitimate problem. And so again, I don't want that to be taken as me saying, like, that's a problem that Mahomes needs to recalibrate on, and until he fixes it, he's a mediocre quarterback. It's none of that. But it is the one thing right now that I'm most concerned about, I guess.
And it is something that, like long-term, I'm with you. Long-term, I don't think anybody really should be worried. Like, he's given us no reason to be.
Yep.
But maybe it is an issue for this year, and maybe that issue ends up costing you a game in the playoffs. Like you know, like that little things can, like, I don't expect anything, like, any little thing to, like, mess Mahomes up long term, but it can cost you a season. And that's just another year where you're like, hey, well, we wasted this year. Like, last year we wasted Mahomes because of the defense.
Right.
It's very possible this year gets wasted because the offensive line wasn't able to keep him healthy.
Yeah.
And at which point he kind of, it's just in his head that, hey, I'm getting hit a lot.
I need to work outside of the structure.
I've got to run a little bit more. And even when you got a clean pocket, you're just assuming, hey, I've been getting hit all day, or I've been getting hit all week, all month. Like, I've got to get out of here because typically these guys are coming.
Right.
Like, it's little things that just get in your head and that can throw a lot off.
And again, like, to something that Seth mentioned with Josh Allen. There are times whenever he has a minute to stand back there and just look around. Mahomes hasn't gotten many of those opportunities, and when he has, like you're saying, like, he's expecting that to go away, which, again, is partially on the offensive line, because that's largely been true, is that if you have a second, you should still probably be moving anyway, because that second is about up. Like, by the time you realize you have time, it's gone. And so that overall, that's the little ecosystem with the Chiefs that I'm probably the most concerned about. And I would say short-term and long-term, because, again, I don't want him to have to worry about that bad habit. And because, and I just said this with him, but, like, I have had an evolving opinion on what I think about investing in the offensive line, because while Mahomes can succeed with a below average offensive line in front of him, I don't want him to always have to.
It's about maximizing what you have with him.
And that's the other thing. It's two parts. Yeah. I don't want him to always have to succeed in spite of his offensive line. We've seen Aaron Rodgers have to solve that problem. But secondarily, I think his ceiling is highest whenever he's got a second. Mm-hmm. And that might seem obvious, but, like, one of the lazy criticisms about Patrick Mahomes is, oh, well, he's better moving out of the pocket than he is sitting in it. It's just not true. Analytically, anecdotally, any way you can make it, that's simply not, that's a false, that's that is a straw man argument. It's a ridiculous statement to make.
Yeah, I think the narrative basically just came about because you just see more wild plays. Because that's you see him running around a lot and making some throw on the run, and so it looks flashier. And that makes you think, oh, he's obviously better at doing
And he's
this.
Tremendous at that.
Yeah.
But his best game is whenever he gets to hang in the pocket and sit there and read and react. And then there will always be the plays that get busted where he makes some crazy superhuman throw. Yeah. And that's great, and I love that. But I would like for him to at least genuinely have the option. And right now, with some questions across the line, part of it on them, part of it on him, I worry about that relationship right now.
Hopefully, as, like, now with Eric Fisher getting healthy, that will, as he just gets used to that again, that will help out some.
I had hopes of that happening against the Raiders because you had the whole bye week and you were all healthy and everything. And, like, they're having a hard time dealing with stunts. And so we're going to get an excellent test of the Chiefs' offensive line against the Patriots coming up on Sunday. We take a break. Whenever we come back, Sad Fans on Reddit, Raiders Edition!
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.